From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of December, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear from Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather about the forecast in South America and really about the climate and how good it has been for most of Brazil and Argentina. Mike will detail that for us. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll come back to the commodity markets, do something a bit more in-depth with Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand. Anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, that's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.40¾. That was up 3½. The May at $4.46¼, up 2½¢. In December, $4.34¾ a bushel, up 1¾. January beans rallied back after deep losses yesterday, up 11¼ at $9.63. The March at $9.66½, 13¼ higher. And November beans next year's at $9.76¾, up 11¢. Bean meal, $4.60 higher. The bean oil up 46 cents. Wheat futures, soft red, down 8¼. Settlement price there at $5.33 a bushel. And the hard red at $5.43¼, down 5½¢. Both of those in the March contracts. Taking a look at some of the other markets, livestock futures finished at $186.55 for the live cattle, down $1.77½. Feeders, $2.80 lower, $254.57½, and lean hogs at $83.62½, up 7½¢. That for 100 pounds. Crude oil at $69.30 a barrel, 73¢ lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil down a penny and 0.8¢ per gallon at $2.23¢. And the wholesale price of gasoline today down 2¢ at $1.92¢ for the day. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with something a little different today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has managed to bounce back, but it was in a sharp decline yesterday. When those declines happen, does it impact the commodity markets very much?
You know, one thing that a move in the Dow typically does is, yeah, you see a fair amount of weakness associated, a pretty strong correlation whenever you look over at, you know, at cattle, first of all. It's like where you get the strongest correlation. And so a lot of times whenever you see equities, in essence, move lower, of course, it affects what they want to call, you know, consumer confidence. And so a lot of times, you know, that'll spill over, especially in the cattle. But, you know, sometimes you'd say, you know, looking at the Dow, looking at the things I like to look at are always the Dow, the dollar, you know, and then, of course, crude oil. And so clearly this week, you know, the Dow has been on the struggle bus, you know, and then you look over at, for instance, the crude oil market, you know, and it's been kind of a chop to lower type feel. But golly, the dollar, you just can't slow that thing down. You know, this would be about, I believe, the eighth session row of closing higher. That was, of course, after, I believe, 5 or 6 out of 8 sessions that we moved lower. So with you moving higher like this, I mean, we're still off the highs. If you want to go back to the high, it was on the 22nd of November, 108.070. You know, and then right now we're trading about a dollar below that. But man, this dollar's been strong. But yeah, I do think the equities definitely are very closely watched. But one thing people would like to see at some point is a flow from equities over into commodities. It's something we've been waiting on for a long time. Maybe it's a possibility sometime this year, but I just don't think commodities look super attractive to buy right now, especially them already holding this big corn long.
Yeah. So what is it that causes that equities to move out of the dollar and into commodities? Usually a safe haven, but is there something on the upside that would cause that too? For instance, do they find value at some point in the commodities?
Yeah. I mean, essentially when you see, for instance, commodities taking a hit over the course of time, and getting to what you would call is a cheap bargain type levels, a lot of times if the equities are rich, you'll start to finally see a flow of that money. And what it is that these big fund, big players, they're looking for something to buy that they can make some money on, of course. And so if you feel like it's kind of run its course as far as this equities rally, especially, after the election, of course, we had a little bit of enthusiasm. That seems to have subsided somewhat. Now, there's, of course, a lot of uncertainty. The Fed came out there yesterday, and not only did they say we probably can't expect near as many rate cuts, but they said that their inflation target rate is 2.5% instead of 2%. So I think that's got everyone just a little uneasy right now, with people being in an uneasy state. Sometimes you can see that flight over to safety, like you mentioned, which would be over to the commodities. So whether we get that or not will be, something to very closely watch, because heck, we can use all the help we can get right now.
Yeah, so tell me about the marketplace. Who's positioned where, and start with corn?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, for instance, last week, at corn, I mean, we bought almost 80,000 contracts, of corn, and they were able to, I think it's the third biggest buying week that we had had. First of all, another thing to note about what's going on, for instance, with the commitment of traders report is that whenever you look at this, this is the longest the funds have been for corn, going all the way back to February of 23. It's a pretty big deal, really. So the funds are long corn, about 165,000 as of last Tuesday's close. Now, if you look at, for instance, soybeans, their current, is that they bought a bunch of beans, but they still haven't quite gotten, I guess, over to the long side. They're still on the short side. The thing is, you look at soybean meal, they're very short beans, and then you look over at the commercials. So what are we talking about the commercials? Of course, those that are buying the corn. So, they've got a pretty heavy net short position last week, whereas, the fund stepped in and bought, it was more like, I think when it was all said and done, I'm showing around 92,000 contracts. The commercial sold 98. And so essentially, as what that is that's a transfer of ownership from the farmer over to the commercial, and so essentially the funds, they're buying, whereas the farmer's selling, and the commercial is having to offset that position until it either gets used up or gets passed on, but they have to take that short position. And so it's very interesting to note that the funds buying corn while the farmers selling it, and the commercials are selling it. But you look over at soybeans, and their short is only a 15,000 contract short. Todd, to me, that's super interesting, because you'd have to think that this time of year it'd be much bigger than that, but it's not.
So why do you suppose that the funds are interested in owning, not quite for soybeans, but owning commodities like corn and soybeans?
Well, that's a wonderful question, to be honest with you. Why would they want to own corn with a carryout that is still projected at a 1.738? Stocks to usage ratios clearly are anything but, historically bullish anyway. Whenever you look at it that way, it begs the question. And so a couple things to note. It sure seems like sentiment changed. You had an all-time record short over the summer time frame. You got into August, and of course, August weather, I think, played a big role in this. But essentially, you saw the sentiment from the funds change, where they started really lightening up that short position and turning into a long. And I think some of that probably had to do with weather. Of course, a lot of it had to do with what was viewed as a pretty strong ethanol grind pace. And then, of course, once exports really started to ramp up this fall, I think it was a pleasant surprise to a lot of folks. And I think the funds were looking at it saying, hey, this first quarter disappearance is going to be huge. If that's the case, then let's go ahead and, if we're going to put our bets somewhere, especially on the ag realm, let's go ahead and put it into corn. And it's paid off for them.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. On On this Thursday, let's check in with the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online, Mike Tenora, to see what he's thinking about the crop prospects and the climate, as well as what the weather might hold for the crops in South America. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. I'd like to detail kind of what's been going on in South America, Brazil and Argentina, both other places, if you want, because it just seems as if that crop has been in pretty good shape. What are you seeing and telling your clientele?
Well, we've been saying a couple of different things. Maybe the most important one right now is that if you look at the southern growing region of Brazil, where about 40% of their soybeans come from, this December is going to go down as the coolest since at least 1984. So this is a pretty big temperature deviation and one that we haven't seen in at least 40 years. And if soybeans are sensitive now, which some of them certainly are, this is probably a good thing for soybean development because they're not suffering from any type of heat stress. Rains have been pretty ample over the last several weeks, and because of that, the soil moisture situation is also pretty ideal there. So at the moment, there's not a whole lot of concern. If you want to dig in and get into the tiny details, you might be able to argue that parts of this region, especially around Paraná, they might be turning a little bit too wet, especially if we get some okay rains going forward, which it looks like we will. The southern areas around Rio Grande do Sul, they might be getting a little bit dry once you start to add everything up together and go out into the future a couple of weeks. But this is all pretty minor stuff. Once we head to the north, where the other 60% of soybeans are produced, they were looking really great through November and into the first part of this month. Then they've dried out over the last couple of weeks, but now the pattern is turning quite a bit wetter. And we think that in the end, we're looking at a pretty ideal situation for Brazil soybeans, at least as we move into the first part of next year.
And then in Argentina, what kinds of things are you talking about?
Well, it's drying out in Argentina. They haven't seen a ton of rain over the last 10 to 20 days, and the forecast going forward is not all that promising. Now, we do need to mention a couple of things. Number one, there will be some storms there this weekend, so we're now looking at a completely dry forecast. And we also saw some okay rains over the last 36 hours. So even though it is drying out there, this is not a situation where it's very unusual to the type of situation where you might be worried about a drought. If we're going to become worried about a drought, a couple of things are going to have to happen. Number one, it can't rain very much over the next couple of weeks, and then it has to stay dry all the way into the end of January. So there's a lot of time here before we get overly concerned about it. The only thing you might be able to argue is that early crop corn, which is about 30% of their production, that crop is starting to turn sensitive today with the reproductive phases basically beginning now, and then they'll go on for another 4 weeks. Most of that crop is produced in southern Argentina in Buenos Aires, and they're not really seeing a lot of the rain that we saw over the last 36 hours or what's going to happen this weekend. So you might be able to argue that that crop is in a little bit of trouble just because it's a little dry there now. There's not much rain coming up, but there's no real heat in the forecast. And in the end, Todd, if we can get some okay rains over the first week or two of January, then all these concerns would be negated. So we're still in a little bit of a waiting game in Argentina.
Thank you much, Mike, and we'll talk with you again in the new year.
That sounds great. Happy New Year to you, Todd.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. If you'd like to hear our programs again, you can do that on our website easily enough at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or search them out in your favorite podcast applications. Dave Chatterton is here now. He's for Strategic Farm Marketing. Thanks for joining us on a busy Thursday. Lots happening this week. The marketplace, particularly for soybeans, ugly, as we've talked about during the closing market report the last couple of days. I want to know what your take is on where the bean market is at this point, what's been pushing it, how domestic demand and usage and crush plays into it, what biofuels look like, and then, of course, the export market, just all kinds of things. What have you been fielding, I guess, first off, in the way of questions for producers? Is it that, or is it something else, for instance, the Farm Act and what policies have been playing out in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, Todd, and as you said, kind of a busy period here. A lot going on both in Washington and inside of our markets. And, you know, if we just start with maybe the bean market, a pretty ugly performance yesterday, and, you know, got down. We made new contract lows pretty much across the board, old crop and new crop. And we do still have producers, I think, in general, certainly have marketed a greater percentage of soybeans than corn at this particular point from the 24 harvest. But that doesn't mean we don't, you know, have a ways to go here. And we've got farmers, you know, with DP or storage beans coming up against year-end deadlines, and, you know, a basis contract doesn't work for everybody. So lots of questions, and just we're not getting a lot of traction here. We're having a bounce back day today. We're covering back about half of those losses that we had from yesterday currently. But the trend remains clearly lower, and I think, you know, beans are feeling the weight of maybe two or three different pillars in the marketplace. One is certainly the expectation of what the South American production is going to be, and particularly the Brazilian crop, and those estimates continue to go higher as the potential looks good, the rains continue to come, and development is well along the way. I think the second is we've got a slowdown in the Chinese purchase, you know, pace overall, not just from the U.S., but in beans in general. When we look at their export totals and kind of where they're at this point this year versus where they've been in previous years, we're coming up a little bit short. And, you know, they're fighting their own economic problems and issues there that are slowing their demand. And then I think on top of that, you've got a currency situation where, you know, you take, you know, whether it's our major importers and people like Mexico and Canada, but also China, where their currencies are weak and their purchasing power is diminished. Or if you take the exporters that we compete against, so Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, et cetera, their currencies are weak. The Brazilian real off over 20% this, you know, so far this year. The Russian ruble off over 20%. So it's all adding up to a slowing in demand for U.S. products, and you know, wondering where we're going to price into some demand here. And so far, it's been a pretty ugly ride here in the beans.
How do you see the marketplace? Because corn had been feeling as if there was some strength underneath it, or at least a floor there. How much of a drag do you suppose soybeans might be on that marketplace?
Yeah, I think that's the real question here, Todd. Are soybeans going to be that anchor of the entire complex and kind of, you know, drag everything down with them? Or is it a situation where, you know, corn can kind of float all boats and hold some stability for the entire complex here in the marketplace? And it's gone back and forth a little bit. Corn certainly hasn't rolled over in any big sense. We are off the highs that we've had. And had a tough day yesterday, but, you know, chart wise or technical wise, not in as bad a shape. And I think the onus here is really on the bears in the corn camp. But the USDA, if you look what they did on their report here a few weeks ago, and, you know, a record increase in demand for the January report from the D's to the Jan, I should say, 150 in the export side, 50 in the ethanol side. And I think there's some indication here that, you know, when we look at how strong, you know, cash basis has been, we look at how strong board spreads have been in relationships, that, you know, there's some inkling there that the USDA could actually cut the yield forecast in the January report, which is January 10th here. So that corn balance sheet could certainly get a little bit tighter here as we go along. And, you know, what we're left with is a corn bean pricing relationship or ratio relationship that it's kind of pushing the historical bounds in favor of corn, and we're wondering how much wider that may be able to get with the, you know, the relative discount of soybeans versus corn. We're in that 2.12, 2.14 range, where 2.3 to 2.5 is more of the historical middle mark. So a lot of discussion about next spring and what that might mean for corn acres, and certainly, you know, most analysts see those rising.
You said that corn might have to lead the pack. Does that mean you know? Don't have confidence in the wheat market?
Yeah, I mean, wheat, you know, took its turn here overnight this morning, making it round to contract lows like beans did yesterday. And, you know, we still, the global balance sheet for wheat, particularly in the hands of the global exporters, is much tighter than it's been in previous years. But it's not that we're lacking supply or going to feel like we're going to run out at any point soon. And, you know, finding traction in that wheat market has been been a tough go here all along. I mentioned that, you know, we talked about the Brazilian currency, but we're also seeing the Ukrainian and the Russian currencies, you know, move in favor of making those export offers more competitive versus the U.S., where we have a strong dollar here. And the dollar, you know, even today with some recovery in some of those competitor currencies, still showing a higher trade, still above 108 for the first time, I think, in 27 months here, Todd. So, you know, strong dollar has a lot of good attributes in terms of the bigger economic picture. But one of the things that it does do is make our exports a little bit more, a little less competitive. And I think we're really feeling that in the wheat market right now.
And before I let you go, I want to hear from you what farmers are asking you about or what their concerns are as it's related to the CR, continuing resolution, that has been trying to make its way through Congress over the last week and a half, was stopped yesterday. What do farmers say about the payments that may or may not be there at some point? And how do they view them?
Yeah, it's a really tough question and tough conversation right now. We have a lot of producers who are, you know, into the year-end tax planning and then starting to talk with their bankers about, you know, operating notes for 2025, and things are tight. And, we spoke with Bart Fisher at Texas A&M earlier last week. He said when they ran their models for 2025 on all their virtual farms, one of the worst results that they got in 30 years of doing that. So producers are keenly aware that cash flow and that, you know, margins are going to be, you know, going to be a challenge in the coming year. And so, you know, we had this kind of rug pulled out from underneath this type of a feeling where yesterday, early in the day, it was a done deal. Everybody agreed. It was a bipartisan bill. It was going through. These payments were going to be coming in the mail within 90 days. And it was going to be, you know, the $50 on corn and the 26 on beans and or 30 on beans. And then all of a sudden that got blown up late in the day. So now it's a big question of more uncertainty and more what if, and I think just more angst on the part of the producer of, am I going to get anything? If so, how much and when? And, you know, we've had several bankers that were, I think, penciling in those payments, Todd, in terms of what it meant for you know, the situation in lending in 2025. And now I think that comes in question. So leaves agriculture and production agriculture, particularly row crop farmers, in kind of the lurch here in a very bad sense. Not at all saying that something won't happen, but I think the timeline here is in question. And I think it's very likely that the version of the $31 billion aid package that we saw yesterday or floated earlier this week is probably going to be a little bit different when it finally does, you know, make it across the line.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. And there you will find at willag.org not only our daily agricultural programming, but if you look in the podcast section, you'll find the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. A new one has just been released and updated for it. And you'll also see on the homepage information from the agricultural economist. That's the Farm Doc team, along with the crop scientist and the animal scientist from right here at the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.